Father David Neuhaus, and I am the Patriarchal Vicar of the Latins for Hebrew and Russian-speaking Catholics in Israel.
Now, you are also going to be participating in the Synod of Bishops for the Middle Eastern churches in the Vatican. What do you see as some of the biggest challenges that are facing the bishops of this region at the moment?
Well, there are innumerable challenges that are facing the bishops. I'm not sure that all of these challenges will be dealt with equally during the Synod. But from what I'm sensing, one of the big challenges facing the Catholic Church is how indeed to make coherent the witness of the Catholic Church within a historic situation of great variety and pluralism. So many different Catholic churches, so many different hierarchies. How to get our witness out in a coherent way. And therefore, I think that one of the most important themes will be the theme of communion, a communion among the different Catholic rites, so that we can indeed speak with a voice of the Catholic Church.
You are a Jew. You converted to Catholicism. You've been very involved in the dialogue with the Jewish community in the Holy Land and also abroad. In the working document of the Synod, it says that while clearly rejecting anti-Semitism, everywhere in the church in the Middle East, the religious sentiment in anti-Judaism has been overcome, at least in theory, by the pastoral guidelines of the Second Vatican Council. Instead, the actual animosity between Arabs and Jews seems to be political in character due to the situation of conflict and the resulting political hostility in the region. At the same time, widespread opinion seems to indicate that anti-Zionism is a more political position and consequently to be considered foreign to every ecclesial discourse. But is it possible to separate politics from the religious dialogue?
The situation is very complex here. It's quite clear, I think, to most of the people involved in the dialogue in the forms that it exists in the Middle East. Most people are aware that what needs to develop here is a very specific Jewish-Christian dialogue. And particularly if we think of the only Middle Eastern community that actually is involved in an ongoing dialogue of life with Jews, that would be the Catholics who live in the State of Israel, I think that there needs to be an awareness that the type of dialogue that will develop here will be defined by our context, and our context is a very unique one. This is the only place in the world where Jews and Catholics dialogue, where the Jews are the dominant majority, where Jews have political power, where we have an ongoing conflict, in which creates a situation in which the majority of Christians and the majority of Catholics are on the other side with regard to the Jews, which makes the whole Jewish-Christian dialogue scene in the Middle East and particularly in Israel a very, very interesting one, very, very challenging and very different from what we are mostly used to when we speak about Jewish-Christian dialogue in North America or in Western Europe.
In other words, in the Holy Land, Christians are seen as the weaker partner in this dialogue. I've had Christian religious and lay people say, well, you know, if we speak out too strongly against some of the social or political issues in Israel or in the Holy Land in general, we suffer the consequences. Visas will not be issued. Churches might be closed down. It'll be more difficult to get property, concessions, and that sort of thing. Is this a real problem?
It is clearly a real problem for the church. The church is in a very precarious situation. The church is perceived by the Israeli authorities, and when we speak about the church, we need to distinguish between different churches. Here we're speaking about the Catholic Church. The church is perceived by the Israeli authorities, and when I say the church, I mean the local church, as being very close to the Palestinian party, to the conflict, and that seems logical because most Catholics are indeed Palestinian. That creates a situation which demands enormous finesse, a lot of diplomacy, a lot of patience, and also an insistent need for the development of a very particular type of dialogue. many Jews who are involved in the dialogue come to the dialogue for reasons which are very clear and very obvious, with a very European or North American take on what that dialogue needs to be. I think that slowly but surely the consciousness needs to become more and more present that Jews are the dominant majority in the dialogue with Christians here. Christians are the weaker and more needy partner in that dialogue, and thus the dialogue will become more indigenous. But it is very, very difficult because of the political conflict. The dialogue that is at present the most vibrant inside the State of Israel is a dialogue between Jews and mostly expatriate Christians who feel comfortable with an agenda that is formulated according to a much more Western model. The ongoing dialogue between Palestinian Christians and Israeli Jews is still very much in its infancy, but indeed beginning. There are hopeful signs as more Jews seek out more Palestinian Christians. Palestinian Christians are motivated also to try and understand more deeply the Jewish mindset. There is a dialogue that is beginning.
Yet there seems to be a pervasive feeling among Christians in the Holy Land that the Jewish community is just simply not interested in any kind of dialogue or any real sort of dialogue.
I would tend to agree and disagree with that statement. Why do I agree? Because indeed, Palestinian Christians are a very, very marginal presence. We are somewhere less than 2% of the population as Christians in the Holy Land, and therefore the Jewish population certainly has other agendas that are much more important, including the dialogue with Muslims, because of the situation of the State of Israel right at the heart of the Muslim world. But on the other hand, in my own experience, and it's an ongoing of experience of being constantly invited to present the church's positions, talk about Christian faith, etc., etc., there is an incredible curiosity about what Christianity is, what does the church teach, who is Jesus Christ, and why did this civilization have such an important role in the history of the world? And I find that I myself am constantly invited. Now, here, of course, this could be problematic for Palestinian Christians whose most important topic on the agenda would be the difficulty of day-to-day life. It is true that probably most Israeli Jews are not particularly interested in dealing with that. But at the same time, I think that there needs to be a realization that it is becoming more and more important to have in the State of Israel a church that speaks Hebrew, the language of Jewish Israeli society, and thus can engage the Jewish partners in dialogue in their own language and answer the questions that are being asked, engage in the joint process of spiritual search that is being undertaken. And here we are living in very interesting times as Israeli society becomes more and more self-confident, less and less traumatized by the historic minority experience of the Jewish people, and therefore more engaged in a dialogue with Christian partners.
How long has the church in Jerusalem, in the Holy Land, been active with ministry to Hebrew-speaking Catholics here? And how exactly do you go about it? And how big is the community?
Our Hebrew-speaking Catholic church was founded shortly after the foundation of the State of Israel, officially erected as a pious association in the middle of the 1950s, so that we have some decades of history behind us, but we are certainly a very, very young church. The sacramental community today is very, very small. We are talking about somewhere between 400 to 500 people gathered in seven different communities, five of them Hebrew-speaking and two of them Russian-speaking, so that on the level of the administration of the sacraments, we're talking about a very small presence. But the work of the Hebrew-speaking church goes way beyond the sacramental communities. A second domain of very great importance for us is the fact that in the State of Israel today, due to the presence of hundreds of thousands of foreign workers, somewhere over 200,000 foreign workers, a large population of refugees for this small country, a few tens of thousands. We have today a situation in which Catholic children, who are not Israeli, but are living in Israel and are perfectly enculturated in Israeli, Jewish, Hebrew-speaking society, are being educated in very good Israeli, Hebrew-speaking Jewish schools and receiving almost no Christian education. Our little vicariate is very concerned about that and would like to contribute to the educational process of these children by offering them the possibility, at least, of receiving also an education within the church. So this is an enormous project for us. We are a very small, modest, poor on every level group of people, but we are trying to turn out textbooks. We are writing now catechetical textbooks in Hebrew. We are going into the foreign worker and refugee communities in order to organize activities with the children. And of course, all of this is done in Hebrew. Speaking Hebrew itself is a totally new experience for the church, a few decades old, as we live our Catholic lives in Hebrew. And the third domain that is very important for our vicariate is giving a voice to the church in Hebrew within Israeli Jewish society that, as I mentioned before, is becoming more and more open to the dialogue with Catholics, more and more interested in the history of the church, what the church teaches, and who is Jesus Christ. An important the rediscovery of Jesus as a Jew has, of course, an impact also on our Jewish brothers and sisters.
Now, earlier you said that many Jews are indeed curious about learning more about Christianity and what it's all about. How is Christianity and particularly Catholicism taught in schools in Israel?
Here, too, there is a growing openness. And recently I went through some of the textbooks that talk about Christianity. Most of the textbooks that talk about Christianity would be textbooks that are teaching history. And what I was very pleasantly surprised to discover is that the textbooks that have all been rewritten within the last decade have a much more positive tone than the textbooks of the past, specifically with regard to the figure of Jesus and the history of the early church. I have found that in the secular textbooks, I'm not now talking about the religious school textbooks where there are still enormous problems of a certain teaching of contempt for Christians and Christianity and for the person of Jesus. I'm speaking about the textbooks that have been written for secular Israeli Jewish schools. These textbooks are increasingly respectful and interested in the early history of Christianity, and the teaching is done with a great amount of respect. We run into problems, of course, as the history of the church develops. And, of course, in this country, the Hebrew language educational system is very focused on the Jewish experience. Focused on the Jewish experience, then, of course, the center of attraction is the very difficult and often traumatic relations between the church and the Jewish people that get underway after Constantine, most particularly during the Middle Ages and the later history. There it becomes very much more problematic, as a Christian might feel very offended by the way that the church is presented in the Hebrew language textbooks that are written for Jewish school children. At the same time, of course, the church recognizes more and more by herself the problematic nature of that history. But there is still a lot of work to be done so that Jews become more and more aware that in Israel they constitute the majority, they are the dominant, powerful majority, and therefore it becomes very necessary from an educational point of view to inculcate respect for the minorities that are present within the state of Israel, including the Christian minority.
Now, one particularly important phase in the dialogue between Christians, Jews, and Muslims would have come with the Second Vatican Council and the Nostra Aetate document, which was issued. Could you explain a little bit about how that particular document is seen here, how it is taught in Israeli society?
I would say that most unfortunately, most Jews wouldn't know what we're talking about. They wouldn't understand the language that we are using. But the occasions of the two papal visits the most two most recent papal visits. Firstly, the visit of Pope John Paul II in the year 2000, and then the visit of Pope Benedict last May in 2009, were two visits that drew attention to the change that has taken place in the Church, so that Jews might not know what Nostra Aetate is, but what they see is the head of the Catholic Church coming with great respect to visit our Jewish brothers and sisters. The visit of both Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict XVI to the chief rabbinate, the prayer at the Western Wall, the visits to Yad Vashem would go a very long way in showing an Israeli public that would have a certain education of suspicion towards the Catholic Church. It would make them realize something has changed here. The tone of these visits, the respect in which with which the Pope goes to visit the chief rabbis, the president of the State of Israel, discusses with the prime minister. All of these meetings make very present in a very iconographic way, in a very visual way, the changes that we know happened as a result of the Second Vatican Council, as a result of the document of Nostra Aetate. We still have a long way to go because of centuries on both sides of the divide, the Jewish-Christian divide, centuries of a teaching of contempt for the other. It takes a long time to fully eradicate that. But there is movement. There is movement in that line within the State of Israel.
Nostra Aetate, of course, dates back to the 1960s when the Second Vatican Council took place. Have there ever been study sessions dedicated to that document?
Oh, absolutely. One of the fields in which Christianity is particularly important is, of course, training the hundreds and hundreds of Israelis who work as tour guides. And they are the ones who guide around Christians. But not only there. There has been extensive attention given in universities and other institutes of learning to the developments within the Catholic Church. I have participated in many of these sessions, and there have been many, many sessions devoted to that. Of course, as always happens, this tends to be the monopoly of an educated elite. I'm not sure that if you walked in the street and asked an average Israeli about the most recent developments within the Catholic Church, whether that Israeli might be able to answer. But certainly an educated elite, and also increasingly among Orthodox Jews, is aware that something interesting and important is happening within the Catholic Church. And the testimony to that is the incredible search, constant search within universities and other institutes of higher learning for Christians who are able to teach about Christianity in Hebrew. Of course, here the Church, and it's written in the Instrumentum Laboris, must become more conscious of the need to train Christians to enter into dialogue with Jews and be willing to serve as spokespeople for the Church within Jewish, Israeli, Hebrew-speaking society.
One does hear stories, very unfortunate stories, in the Holy Land, in Jerusalem itself, of priests, religious, being spat upon, indicating that a certain schooling of Judaism really does see Christians as, well, with contempt. Is there anything being done to change that attitude or that perception of Christianity?
There have been a number of incidents, particularly within the Old City, particularly involving more extremist Orthodox Jews in acts of contempt and even attacks, physical attacks on Christians. And there we have allies within the Jewish society who are trying to raise consciousness about how unacceptable this is. I think it is important, though, that we understand that this is not only a teaching of contempt based upon some kind of theological judgment of Christianity, but also the very sad memories of how Christians treated Jews in many places outside of Israel, where Christians were the majority and Jews were a minority. Unfortunately, it's Palestinian Christians who often bear the brunt of this hostility. Palestinian Christians had nothing to do with what went on in Europe. But at the same time, the very sign of a cross I can send some Jews off on a rampage. The very sign of the cross brings back memories of great traumas throughout Jewish history. And I think that here, again, what is required is an enormous amount of love, an enormous amount of patience, and an insistence that things change. Things need to change. I go back to the basic point, and that is our Jewish brothers and sisters must take responsibility for the fact that here they are the majority, and therefore they are obligated as the dominant majority to make sure that minorities can live in respect, in peace, and continue their lives, their day-to-day lives, as they should.
What efforts has the Latin Patriarchate taken? What steps has it taken to try to engage the Orthodox Jewish community more in the dialogue?
Much progress was made in the time of His Beatitude Michel Sabbah. Michel Sabbah, who was the Latin Patriarch for 21 years, and what is so significant about the time of his patriarchate was it was for the first time that the Church of Jerusalem had a local-born, a Palestinian Arab patriarch. And especially after the year 2000, when the Church took up a new pastoral plan, which, very important to state, was the implementation of Vatican II within the life of the local church, a synodal process within the Church of the Holy Land over 5 years, tried to formulate how the teaching of Vatican II can be incarnated within our local circumstances. And after that synodal process, Patriarch Michel Sabbah founded a commission for relations with the Jewish people that met once a month, mostly, and brought into the patriarchate different representatives of Jewish life in Israel, not only Orthodox, but a very wide representation of Jewish voices, in order to listen to them. And Patriarch Sabbah always said the most important job in the beginning is to be able to listen, to start to discover the reality of the other. But then also, slowly, to present the reality of the Christian Palestinian that is often very much not known by the average Israeli. And so I think that there has been some advance. Patriarch Sabbah also insisted very strongly on the teaching of courses about Judaism in the seminary in Bethlehem University. Again, the problem is the political conflict, the incredibly difficult abyss to bridge, not because of theological positions or positions on truths connected to religion, but because of the very, very sad ongoing conflict, which makes meetings between Palestinian Christians and Israeli Jews very difficult.
One might, in a superficial reading of the Old Testament, come away with the conclusion that it's all an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. It's based on revenge and protecting the society. How can Christians dialogue, juxtaposing the New Testament to the Old Testament, but making a viable dialogue in today's world, contemporary society?
As a professor of Bible, and that's my first love and what I feel is really my vocation, to teach the Bible, I'm very aware that through the centuries, Orthodox with a little O, true Christians have been called upon to read and reread the Old Testament because of their awareness that the New Testament is profoundly rooted in the Old. There is no way to understand the New Testament without the Old. The scriptures of Israel are an integral part of who we are as a Christian people. So that the rather superficial judgment that the Old Testament is full of revenge and war and eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, of course, is a kind of selection of texts that are problematic. I think that there are parallel texts in the New Testament that are no less problematic, but ignores the fundamental dynamic of a God who is constantly in search of his beloved children, his sons and daughters, which is the story that Israel bequeaths to Jesus, and through Jesus that becomes our story. I don't at all feel any internal resonance with the description of the Old Testament as a book that talks about a tooth for a tooth, an eye for an eye, vengeance and war. What we are engaged here in, and here in particular in this land, is trying to combat the manipulation of the Old Testament heritage in order to justify injustice and conquest. This is a very, very dangerous and perverted reading of the New Testament, of the Old Testament, sorry, that is rather widespread in fundamentalist Christian circles, not only Protestants, but some Catholic circles as well.
Here you're talking about Zionism.
Christian Zionism, which is rather different from Jewish Zionism, has its own history and its own logic and is very connected to the history of a fundamentalist interpretation of Scripture that I think is a perverted one, very far from the message of Scripture. And the local church here in Israel and Palestine is particularly challenged by that, because sometimes the feeling of local believers is our own holy book is being used against us. It's being used as a title to a land that is also the land of our forefathers, and this book is being used to dispossess us. And so a very important part of my own work is also to teach Old Testament so that it can become a nourishing source of life for Christians, and most important of all, a book through which we can see with much greater detail the person of God and Jesus.
Are you, through your work, trying to engage some of these Christian evangelicals who believe in bringing back the Jews to this part of the world in order to bring about the second coming?
We do have some dialogue, particularly with a group in this country who are called Messianic Jews. Messianic Jews are a very, very diverse group of people, and some of those that are more fundamentalistic and evangelical would be profoundly anti-Catholic and so would not be in dialogue with me. But I think that there is an enormous need here to engage all readers of the biblical text, not only Protestant and evangelical Christian Zionists, but also Jews, in order to come back to what is this text fundamentally teaching? Is it fundamentally teaching a lesson about who the land belongs to within the conflict situation, or is there something much more important, much more profound, much more God-centered that is of value in the text? And I think here we have an enormous challenge in front of us in the need to dialogue about the biblical text so that the biblical text is not manipulated and perverted and used as a justification for violence and retribution.
Are you satisfied with the Jewish presence in the synod and outside of the synod in the activities which are being planned to surround the synod, let's say? And do you think, I've been told by a few of the bishops that they're a bit concerned that this synod might be used in a political way for some to get across some political statements?
I think that the outside world must realize that the synod is first and foremost a time for the Catholic Church to speak to itself. This is a time of great travail for all Christians in the Middle East and also for the Catholics in the Middle East. And I see that the Synod, and that also seems to be the focus of the Lineamenta and of the Instrumentum Laboris, is first and foremost a time to talk to one another in order to renew our identity, our commitment to witnessing to what we believe. We do that within a context that is interreligious. And so there is no way that we can ignore, and I don't think that we would want to ignore, the Muslims, the Druze, and the Jews. Of course, again, this comes back to a fundamental reality of the Middle East, and that is the Jewish presence is only real for the church in Israel. It is real also for the church in the Palestinian territories, but it's a very negative reality, conceived basically as the army and the settlers. it is real for the rest of the Arab world, including the Christians in that world, because Israel is perceived as a political enemy. And so that I think here the focus on the dialogue with the Jews and Judaism will not be the central issue. Much more important will be the ongoing dialogue of life with Muslim brothers and sisters with whom most Christians in the Middle East spend their day-to-day lives. So that I think that it is very courageous that the Instrumentum Laboris gives 10 paragraphs on dialogue with the Jewish people. I think that that was much more than I personally expected, knowing the reality of the church in the Middle East. I think that it is very courageous that Rabbi David Rosen will address the Synodal Fathers, bringing the concerns of the Jewish people, and knowing Rabbi David Rosen, I would imagine that he will do it in a very dialogic and a very sensitive way. I don't think that it is justified to expect that a synod consecrated to the presence of the Catholic Church in the Middle East will be as focused on the question of Jews and Judaism as one would expect of a synod of bishops coming from North America or Western Europe.
And finally, what do you hope personally will come out of this synod?
I have many hopes, but I try to be realistic and say that I hope that the Synod will be a time of renewal for Christians. I hope that what will come out of the Synod is a greater clarity of vision, a greater coherence of witness, a greater unity among Christians, among Catholics and all Christians, and a greater courage to engage within the various societies in which we live so that we can be true spokespeople for the gospel values that were preached by Jesus. I think that those are realistic hopes. I think that indeed the Synod will be a moment of renewal and revival.